Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
FX Podcast for Wednesday, April 26th from Las Vegas, NAB 2006. I'm Jeff Huser. Joining me as always, Mike Seymour and John Montgomery.
Yep. Excited to... He did step on me.
We're 2 minutes in.
We're not even great. 2 minutes. It's been a good time. We've really enjoyed doing these podcasts, and been happy that everyone's said sent us all those great comments regarding them. It's been nice because, you know, I mean, we really do this, I guess, for fun.
I don't think we would have done it tonight had we not got the really great emails, because we are so tired.
Yeah, we've had a lot of
We've been up to like
comments.
4 o'clock in the morning editing these, and now we have 8:30 meetings to get the stuff for the next day. It's insane.
Yeah,
it is. So it's been great.
But we're being rude because we have guests.
We'd like them to introduce themselves so you can hear their voice and know which voice goes with which name.
Exactly. First off, we've got Jake Parker.
I'm Jake Parker.
All right, take me literal.
I'm from Minneapolis. I work at Crash and Sue's there.
And we've got another old friend of FX Guide.
Yeah, hi, I'm Philippe Soero. I currently work at Autodesk and been an old friend of the family and doing the FX Guide Live stuff.
That's right.
With you guys.
He's actually the only one man enough to do all 4 years of master.
Wait, what?
I kind of missed you this day. I mean, this year. It's a shame.
Well, you guys did a great job.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, it was a great job.
Both of you really
enjoyed
it. You
didn't need us.
And we slept a lot more than last year.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it.
Well, see, last year everything stopped Sunday. This time it just kept going. Because of these podcasts. And
I want to do another call out to a friend in Melbourne, Peter. So, g'day. Peter's been isn't able to be on NAB this year, so he wanted to say hi.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter. We miss you.
He would be here with us.
He would.
He normally is on the couch, you know, drinking our beer and stuff.
Tequila.
So, yeah, tri-colored corn chips.
Exactly.
So, day three. So what do we think of the show?
I think the show's been interesting. I've hung a lot out at the Autodesk booth, of course, and watched a lot of the demos, because it's always fun to see how other artists approach different challenges, and it's always inspiring. I always go back home feeling very inspired by all the stuff I'm seeing. So, and I've done a little exploring. I'm sure that you've probably heard other podcasts that the guys have been talking about. The red camera is the buzz of the show, and it's a lot of very exciting things.
Yeah, it's funny, actually, talking about the red camera. We had Assimilate was mentioned by the red guys in that thing as being one of the three partners, I think, with who are the other two? Apple and Kona, right?
Kona, yep.
Yeah, and so we asked them what's, you know, Assimilate's role in all of this, and we got the most cryptic comment back. It is clear that we're in the midst of a new era in digital film acquisition and workflow, a huge advantage to the creative and post-production markets. It's all about the essential mix, and Red gets it. So I think that really clears it up, doesn't it?
I feel much better.
I completely understand what Assimilate's doing now. That's great.
The Bush administration.
Yeah, I think it's like, say nothing.
Well, no, let's not go down that line.
Sorry.
Be here a long time.
Yeah, but actually one thing that is related to that is somebody pointed out in an email to me is what the hell are you going to do with this data when it comes in? Because if you've got 4K data streaming off something, or even 2K streaming off, where the hell are you going to put it? And we got to... What's wrong?
I'm just thinking how great this thing is.
Okay, cool.
I was
really,
really impressed by it.
Yeah, because John and I went down to look at Codex, and Codex is a...
How's that?
C-O-D-E-X.
All right, we'll put a link up if they got a page.
Yeah. Okay, so what this is, and there's a... we'll try and put what we can on it. It's brand new. In fact, it's so new that they were at the obscure corner of the show, and I guess that's a theme for tonight, obscure stuff that we've seen at the show. Because they're always, you know, we're surprised.
I love that stuff. Yeah.
But this is a data recorder, and so you kind of go, yawn data recorder. But actually, it's really cool. What happens is you plug in, and you can run simultaneously 2 HD uncompressed streams into this sucker off camera, and then it'll simultaneously output, say, an HD version, possibly with color correction on it or some kind of LUT applied, and it'll store all the information. It has removable drives that pop out, a bit like a brick, and you just take the brick out, take it away, put another one in. They can mirror information. You can wirelessly, with a PDA, sit behind the director, and as he says a go take, you can mark it on your PDA, and it automatically wirelessly gets picked up by the disc recorder and enters into its database. It can output Codex completely pre-done quick times for Final Cut, And then, of course, it traces back to the original files.
What's really interesting is you have that original files recorded on the system. Those never change. And so what you do is you set up virtual directories with this. And you would set up a virtual directory of JPEGs, a virtual directory of QuickTimes. And you can use search metadata by clip name, by all the stuff that you have associated with it. Hmm. So that media is never actually built until it's asked for by remote computer. So you log in over the network on your Mac, browse the file system, you can see the files, and when you click on the file, only at that point is the file actually generated. So you have these really interesting virtual directories where the media is actually never really created until it's asked for.
Sounds like Mount Stone.
Yeah.
Well, if it's recording...
No, it works. Memories there. Anyway.
I thought we weren't going to edit this.
If it's through... quickly moving on. If it's recording from the Dulce original camera, you know the Dulce, right? That actually, it records in the raw pre-Bayer pattern data stuff from the camera, and also to record the Genesis raw files. So you're getting in, you know, the full bandwidth, and then it'll actually do the Bayer conversion, and in the case of the Dulce stuff, and then display it, which I think is pretty cool, or do two cameras simultaneously. So it's a very robust thing. What was the storage on each of the bricks in the... It was like an hour, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Basically, you've got an hour load per, and you'd probably have one... Well, that was you saying you'd have two beside each other as a 100% backup on set.
Using one for acquisition, one for kind of serving files to clients and stuff on the net as a backup.
But each one contains two bricks. So each one's got 2 hours. Yep. So that would be 4 hours on set. And then you could obviously have extra modules and stuff. But it's actually codexdigital.com, and we'll put a link up if you want to look at it. But
And you know, I mean, not to put too much value in this, it's actually also really nicely designed, it looks like. You know, it's very rugged for on-set shooting, and aesthetically it's actually totally cool looking, nice industrial design, but all the drives are encased in really
in rubber, and they've got shock things and
it's really, really well thought out, I think. And the UI that you use on the touch screen to access it,
that was so funny, because the guy goes, I can't quite find the menu. And I went, was this it here? And he's like, oh, yeah.
It really, it looks like I
used it before. And I was like, well, like, it's really obvious what they're doing.
Yeah, so, and cool. You have that UI, as you mentioned earlier, mirrored on your PC.
Or your laptop.
So what you're saying is that they're also capable of doing real-time RGB conversion with Dulce files, for example? So.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So you've got real-time conversion, so you can have like a director's monitor that's maybe HD as a preview of what's going off on set. You could also be outputting QuickTimes because somebody wants those. You could be embedding metadata in the QuickTime. You could it takes in audio, four channels of audio, and that could be done as well. So, yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. It's definitely... And, of course, if you're going to start doing a lot of this high-resolution capture, where you're going to put the data is a big issue. So I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it really was.
How do you find these places when they're in the corner of the place and there's so much stuff to look at?
Yeah, that's a good point. But you know what? We found another one.
And this one was in like the satellite and truck area.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Those are always my favorite.
My eyes just kind of glaze over when I walk into that room.
Okay, one was really funny because it was so lame. It was like the future of 3D holographic projection, and has this like screen. And if you stood dead in front of it, it looked like a normal picture. And anywhere slightly off center, you got a double image. And I was like, right. So if I don't move, it looks pretty ordinary.
So in the future, holographic images will be
really dull. But that wasn't the one that was really interesting. The other one that was really interesting were these guys that had super high-speed recording. So interesting, like the Red camera, this is a flash memory module-based camera, and it clicks on the top, and the camera itself records at incredibly high speeds, 480 frames a second at 2K. And so basically it runs that... It kind of caches it in RAM, then it goes to the flash memory, and then you pop off the thing, which looks like a oversized iPod, click that off, and then just click the next one on for the next take.
Oh, yeah. I saw those guys, too.
They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
So,
pretty cool.
But can you remember the name of them?
No.
It was like Phantom
65,
I think.
We won't be posting a
link
to the... Oh,
yeah.
No.
We'll look
we'll search while we're doing
this. We can figure this out.
Did you guys go and look at the Arri, the D2 camera?
No, tell us about that.
Well, I don't know that much about it, but
it's like somebody else knows about it.
But it is recording to a 35 millimeter size chip, so and it'll record 4K. So that's kind of cool. But the cute thing that I really zeroed in on was that they have a what do they call it? Basically, they've got a hardware capture card. That's just a memory chip,
the map,
and it sits on top of the camera, and it's shaped like a mini film magazine. but it's really just a hardware recorder. Oh, that's great. It's kind of cute. But it's a very, very nice looking camera. Really outputting amazing stuff.
You're saying it's the D2 camera?
I think it's called the D2.
Okay. Yeah. From Arri? It would be like the D20, really.
Yeah, I think the
D20. Is it 20?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it's actually not really a 4K camera at this point. It actually captures natively 3x2K in raw format.
They were... Okay.
Okay, well, if we're talking about the same thing, that's...
I'm sure we are.
Okay.
Yeah, there's...
so, yeah. And I believe it can output raw data files as well as HD. So it's...
They showed some interesting side-by-side comparisons of 35 versus stuff captured on the camera and images blown up from the digital capture.
So I've got to say to that match the same 3K size as the 35. Isn't that bad. It's not like 3K's, you know, horrendous or anything.
No, as far as Arri is concerned, is 3K, which is destined to actually do HD, really. But that was the main purpose originally. So now they're making the 3K by 2K images available, if you want to, as raw data files. So,
and Arri is a terribly respected camera company, which would give DIPs a lot of confidence, I think.
Of course. And at the same time, also, it's interesting because they're releasing a 16mm camera. Apparently, it's a very slick camera that looks like a 435, really, really nice and neat. So it's interesting to see that in this day and age of digital cameras, at the same time they're still releasing and still believing in film formats.
Yeah, so. I mean the D20, I like it because the actual sensor is like about the size of 35 film.
Right,
and
absolutely.
I think they first announced it at IBC in about 2003. But, so basically it's got BL mounts for the 35mm lenses and stuff, and HD SDI out and stuff, which is really good.
Their approach is also interesting because what they're trying to do is deliver images which can then eventually emulate certain film stocks. So that's really the type of approach that they're selecting. Instead of creating entirely, let's say, electronic looks, they're capturing electronically.
Now, that's a whole philosophical discussion right there, isn't it? Because, I mean, why are we going to so much trouble to reintroduce artifacts that are there as a byproduct of the capture mechanism?
Because it's really what people know. I mean, today, it's the reference. Film is a reference whether you like it or not at this point. So... And it's not necessarily in terms of reproducing grain management. We're talking more here in terms of reproducing contrast and color characteristics before we talk about grain management. So I think it makes sense, though, because people do relate to film stock still today. So, and it's just a starting point, really.
Yeah. What do you think?
Now, somebody made an interesting comment to me once about that subject, about, you know, that's fine now, but there's a whole generation of filmmakers coming up that may have never shot a frame of film in their life and will not care about any of this stuff and will... be totally fine with digital images and whatever.
You know, that's a really good point. And we had dinner with someone the other night, and they were saying that generation, interestingly, the generation that came from music videos and stuff are now getting into their, you know, first features and stuff. And the shooting ratios have gone through the roof. So what used to be 40,000 feet a day is now gone up to 70,000 feet a day because they're just shooting a heck of a lot more film.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the reasons that these digital cameras are of interest, because they just want to shoot friggin' everything.
Right.
Whereas in the old days, they were quite disciplined on set in, like, you know, rolling. Now it's like they don't want to stop between takes. They want to just go again and let the camera roll.
Right, I can see that.
And so that's caused the dailies industry, especially in places like LA, to have to run a lot more film for dailies.
Right. Well, the same thing applies on the other end, on the DI side. There was somebody made a comment yesterday about once you've done a DI film, you'll never go back. And we see that a lot of films that, you know, I wouldn't think would go through DI. I've seen, you know, it seems like a lot more films are going through DI at every level.
Right, yeah.
I'll stick my neck out here and say I actually prefer working with DOPs from a film background because, quite frankly, the DOPs that are just in commercials have gotten pretty slack. I mean, it's not a very popular thing to say, but I've been in telecine suites, and they're just not nailing it.
Yeah.
And the feature guys just nail it.
Yep.
And it's quite horrendous how much the DPs just want the colorists to kind of hide their errors. And I've, like, seen two stops out, and they've just gone, just fix it. As if, like, you know, before anyone sees. And I was like, but... And I shut up.
It's too easy to fix. You know, it becomes simple and not lazy is not the right word. But you don't have to concentrate as much, I don't think. No.
Have you guys had a chance to check out the Cine Alta things also? The Cine Alta and the new Sony Did you go to the event which was taking place yesterday?
No.
They were showing HD and a 4K projection. Actually, I thought it was quite interesting and frustrating. I mean, you know, my background is more film, so obviously I'm quite partial to film in general. And I mean, I have to recognize that you know, digital capturing is really the way to go, and it will eventually bring a lot of advantages to filmmaking. It was interesting to hear all these people, which every single year just boast about the fact that HD is such a superior format. And you know, as far as I was concerned, the only thing that I thought looked good was paradoxically just a transfer from 65 millimeter, which was projected in 4K. So from a film called Baraka, if you can recall, so beautiful photography, and it really, really looked good. Although the projection wasn't really that pristine because we weren't really in an actual movie theater. But there's a lot of hammering also about HD being a superior format, and I don't like this type of debate because essentially it's just shifting it from the relevant issue. You know, you have new media, new ways to actually capture images, and they enable new artistic experiences. And so why do we constantly have to, you know, bang this type of ridiculous argument about HD being a superior format?
Format wars are so boring.
They tend to be, yeah.
Created by manufacturers.
It is nice, however,
to
see, you know, cameras like the Aeroflex and the Red camera using these bigger chips so that the lens selections can be normal. You would have the advantages. Maybe this has been mentioned already, but the advantages of the depth of field and stuff that we're all used to seeing and loving. So,
did anybody go by the Ampex booth? They had a 2-inch quad machine running in the Ampex booth.
Really?
And you could tell the age of the people walking by, whether they kept walking or whether they stopped in awe and watched. We just had a hand raised from the gallery. I stood there for a while, and at various times,
people would.
Oh, yes. Sorry to say, yes. But at various times, there were people that I remember. The way I remember the machine most, there were engineers who would drop to their knees, open the doors, look to see what was in there, start tweaking things. That's most of the time when you saw a quad machine, that's what you saw, was an engineer adjusting something.
Exactly.
But it was funny. There was a lot of reverence, like people just looking at it like, oh.
Jumping ahead several decades.
Yes,
hey,
sorry.
The Speed 6 guys, you saw some interesting stuff with a new lens thing, right?
Yeah, they had a new lens tool that both, well, it had a few features, but the two that I sat through with a close demo, one was to take lens distortion out, and you could actually draw a line on a curved surface, just points along it, and then either manually or automatically have it remove that distortion, make it a straight line. And it was interesting. It was like the conversation we had last night. I could see it being used as a creative tool as well as,
absolutely.
You know, it was kind of interesting. You were like, there's a lot of potential there. And that was cool. But you could also then save that setup and then do some work on that footage and then put the bend back in if you wanted to. That looked like that could be really interesting. Mm. They also, the other tool was a new lens flare tool, which kind of made me think, wow, this is like all the stuff that I was missing. And most of the lens flare tools have all kind of paled in comparison to Knoll.
Yeah, I was going to say, except
over
for
the
Noel.
Years. But then Noel became kind of hard to find, and, you know, it's like...
I freaking love that plugin.
I know you do, but this is very similar, and, it, you know, they were available for Discrete, and...
I spoke to the Speed 6 guys tonight, and I asked them why they're supporting Discrete, Assimilate, and Quantel, and Fusion, and not doing things like After Effects and Shake. They had a really interesting point. They said, well, look, they're a really small company. They want to be talking to clients, and the only way that they could do markets like After Effects would be to do direct to the web. They never talk to any clients, and they don't want to do that for a living. You know, it's not
that's
like for money. It's
that's
like
very
genuinely
interesting. I like all those
clients.
Guys so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know what, if we do stuff for Flames and for Fusion, then they're nice people, and we get to hang out with them, and we want to do that with our lives kind of thing. And I thought that was really, really refreshing. Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How is their lens distortion plugin any different from what's available in Photoshop, for example? Is there? Is it just
it's in Fusion? It's not in Photoshop.
It's in Flame. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just available. You know.
Okay. Okay.
Fusion guys are another nice group of people.
Yeah.
Anyone been down to see that stuff?
I
really well placed booth this year.
Yeah. No, Speed 6 too. I was giving them a hard time because they're right on the dead aisle in the middle. They said they've been really busy, and both those guys got really good positions.
Well, I should be talking to Isaac tomorrow, probably maybe early next week. Have some comments from him for Fusion.
Anyone else see anything obscure and tiny boothy? There was some interesting stuff in many of the booths, but you know, trying to
the ultra high definition projection thing
from NHK.
Yes, I think that was it. Yeah, that was
kind of cool. I haven't actually managed to look at that, but I really want to check that out.
Yeah, I didn't get into the theater yet, but I'm anxious to do that.
You know how sometimes you see a lot of times there's like a thing that everybody's carrying around at NAB. This year's thing that I saw people carrying around was something called the Ego from LOL. It was just a little plastic.
Oh yes,
stand.
They were giving away 20 a day or something. Yeah, 20 every hour.
You could put light bulbs, fluorescent bulbs in, and then it was. You could use it to light objects on a tabletop for still cameras or whatever. And it was. I saw a lot of people carrying those around, and especially in the Artbeat bags, they seem to fit well in the Artbeat bags.
Uh huh.
But it's just funny. It's always just, every year there's something. You know, Wacom has a new tablet. And everybody's got the Wacom tablet in their bag. This year it was this soft light.
Now, I saw something that I don't understand. I didn't just see something. Wally told me about something that he didn't understand. And it's, you guys probably know about this, it's black projection screens. Do you guys know about this?
No.
We talked about it last night.
Did we talk about it on air last night?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if we talked about it on air last night. I'm kind of dead.
I was kind of curious. This is Wally Rodriguez. I was kind of curious if Philippe had seen any of these.
You may recognize me from such podcast as yesterday.
I'm famous, Mom.
No, actually, I was kind of curious to find out if Philippe has seen the black projection screen technology, the one from Sony, and they also had one at next to the Draper booth. There's this NEC projector projecting rear screen to basically a black screen, and the Sony technology works with this pure color wavelength thing that they're doing, where the screen's supposed to only reflect pure blue, pure green, and pure red. And therefore reject most ambient light, which is kind of a composite. But I didn't know if he had a chance to see it, because to me, I mean, that's really, it was very nice looking in a very well-lit environment. So I don't know if you'd had a chance to see anything.
Like no, that. Unfortunately not yet. The only thing that I've checked out from Sony really was their new HDCam SR plans to move to and support a 60p, which opens up actually an interesting number of options for the future. So that was interesting. But I haven't had a chance to dig in more into projection stuff, and hopefully that's going to happen before the end of the week.
You know, on This Week in Tech, when somebody mentions something, all you hear is keyboards tapping as people are looking up on the web on all their different rooms. It's been that. If you hear papers rustling, and every time somebody mentions something, you hear
like 3 hours sleep.
People dive over, grab backpacks. They're ripping through backpacks. As you've heard it in the background.
Yeah, it's quite disturbing good. When you're a guest. Because all of a sudden, you're alone at the table.
It's always really funny that the things that people pick up on when they send us emails about the podcast. That guy said something to somebody like, all right, fuck off or something. And they were like, way to go, Mike. What are you laying in? I'm like, what? I didn't really know I was swearing. So anyway, the worst piece of marketing at the show, yeah?
Uh-oh.
See if you can outdo this one.
Opinions expressed on FX Podcast are...
Yeah, right. There's two things that I've noticed. Okay, one is kind of funny, which is everyone's changing their titles in their companies. Like, you know, my title is, you know, Madman at the company, right?
That it's was
like,
rad last night.
Yeah, exactly. But this guy's involved in solutioneering. It's a combination of solution and engineering. He's solutioneering.
Very nice.
And I'm like, is that not the lamest word in history?
It's like Imagineering was taken, so.
Yeah, so we'll do solutioneering, which is just ghastly. Because sometimes you hear those things, like you're getting pictures done, and I swear to God, I just buzzword out. I just completely flip out. Like somehow they think that coming up with, juxtaposition of the underlying metaphor of the principles of what it is that, you know, and every one of these comments about the companies, and we've seen this as well, like aggressively engineering revolutionary foundations for proactive solutions to grow value and scalable content. And I go, that's a quote. And I'm like, what? And it's like, you read it slowly. It's like, aggressively engineering revolutionary foundations by proactively solutioning growing value-added scalable content. Just the words.
Maybe we need a T-shirt against market speak or something. Marketing speak.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just find a lot of the booths just so OTT, but maybe that's just me. It's bombardment, you know what I mean? Like, you're walking down the booth, and it is bombardment.
Well, that's NAB in a
nutshell.
Which
is another good reason to go over to the far end of the satellite dish.
Yes.
You can swing a cat, and you won't hit anyone. It's good.
It's like, mobile units have changed a lot in 20 years since I was in one. It's, like, fascinating.
But, yeah, the flat-screen monitors instead of tubes and crazy. Stuff. Those big multi-split screen. It's like, wow, nice.
But the in terms of booth attendance, seemed to be...
I heard 175,000 is the population this year, which we thought 120 yesterday.
It's very busy.
Yes. I was actually concerned because someone had told me, like, last year about Comdex, that Comdex had gone from like being bigger than NAB and in 5 years went to nothing. It was like 150, then it went to 190, 70 and 50 and they just stopped having it, right? And the reason was the product life cycle of a PC laptop is 90 days. It's out of date in 90 days. So who wants to go to an annual trade show to look at stuff because it's dead, right?
That's interesting.
And I was wondering whether NAB was going to go the same way. It's like, why bother turning up in Vegas when I can get all the information I need off the net? Do you guys think it's still
valuable? I thought that a few years ago, and I don't feel that way. I feel like not coming, you know, if I have the opportunity to come, I have to come because I feel like, you know, it's more the seeing people and talking to people and that the Speed 6, you know, the wanting to talk to their customers, I feel the same way about them. You know, there's people on the floor that I have to go see every year. There's people that I used to deal with back in the old television station days, a long time ago, who I still go and see because, you know, you became, you know,
and you got to admit, there's the whole networking aspect of things, putting a name with a face, getting to know someone. You know what? I mean, it's really not to be understated because just like I love meeting someone. It's like you have email exchanges with someone, you know, 20 or 30 emails, and you're like, looks like that, you know?
It's just
like
that is how I met Wally. I was standing in a queue at an early user group meeting, and I was talking to someone. It might have even been you, Jake. And someone mentioned my name, and I just hear this voice from three people back in the queue going, hey, you're not like that Mike S. guy, are you? And I was like, yeah, I actually, who are you? And he's like, I'm Wally. And I don't know what you were going under then, but you were the same with your initial login, which was
Jake@lamb.com.
Yeah, and I just knew you as Jake@lamb.com. It's like one word.
Yeah. Well, hey, so that's true, John. FX Guide was started by three guys who met on the internet, basically. I don't mean that in a weird way either. You know, common threads on the Flame News over the years and go, hey, wait a minute, we should do something.
But we never met each other face to face for like 3 years or something after
I was lucky.
Exchanging emails. Yeah, well, true. I mean, it was a blessing in disguise, but.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's true. I think networking is really important. I mean, you know, the idea that you can benefit from your peers, certainly that's what FX Guide was started about.
But, I mean, certainly, at least in Los Angeles, I mean, there's not a lot of product that I need to go travel to see. You know, if I want to see it, I can usually find it in town and go see it, or they'll bring it to us, you know.
The days of going checking out a video switcher, an A62, and DVE, and tape machines, and everything like that, where you have to visit 20, you know, different.
Well, that's what I was saying. I was saying that after the podcast last night. You know, I used to come to NAB, and it was exactly that. You had to look at cameras and switchers and mobile equipment and all that kind of stuff, and you'd be running around the whole floor, but you'd do it. Now it's like I barely make it to half the booths I want to get to just in visual effects.
Yeah. You know, I'm starting to feel like, you know, the kids today, they got it so easy.
I was about to be bitchy, so I was going to be...
But, this old podcast,
but the bitchy one that I'll have, and it's a dig at Autodesk, is only that they have these things called whisper suites where you're meant to go in and like, and I didn't do it this year, but you're meant to go in and they're meant to like confidentially talk to you. And basically it's like market research, right? And I'm like refusing to go now because I don't have enough time at the show that I can sit down for 2 hours and have them tell someone my opinion. I'll happily email it to them, but... Like, you know, my thing is, really, honestly, the time you've got at the show, it isn't that long. You've got to pick your battles and go and do it. The floor is, 2 million square feet?
Yeah.
And, like, that's a lot of trade show. You've got to pick your battles. I don't even have really time that much to sit down and watch demos anymore. Major proof falls.
So you're moving from booth to booth to booth to booth really quickly, yeah.
Yeah, I actually build a schedule of where I'm going to be before I even hit Vegas, and then we just go bang, bang, bang from...
And trust me, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, I kind of relate to that actually. As you know, when I used to be like on the other side as a customer, it was quite challenging to actually attend all these Whisper Suite events and everything. At the same time, now that I'm here, I actually really value when people actually take the time to talk and discuss. It's also an interesting way to, I mean, for within Autodesk to bring validation to certain things that you might believe very strongly, but if you don't get the data from the outside world, it's just not going to happen inside of the company. So it's actually much valued that some people take the time.
I'm sure it is valued. I just wish they could get that input without tying me up for 2 hours at the show. And if you're doing validation on multiple products, you know, it can be a whole day.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
A couple of sessions. And
yeah, you're right.
And it takes half an hour to get from one friggin' end of the hall
to
the
other. They're at the other end of the hall, too. So.
It takes about 45 minutes of the queue at Starbucks. But you know, PhD has been going really well. We had a lot of meetings with people today about PhD. the training site, and we just wanted to thank those people that have already registered, because it's been stunning. We've hit literally about a quarter of our target for the first 3 months in the first 24 hours.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah.
That's great.
And there's been a lot of really good comments, quite a few people sending us emails, and we're really happy to respond to them. We're trying to totally keep up with that and respond.
Oh, and if you don't know what we're talking about, FXPhd, if you go to FXguide or FXPhd.com, you'll find all the information about it. New site we launched on Monday.
I just wanted to address one thing, because there's a couple of emails that have come in about this. You know, why we've got beta on the site and what's happening with payments. Let me just explain that, because I think it's important. The reason it's beta is because we wanted to launch on Sunday night, and we did, but there's a lot of protection we're putting into the site on credit card stuff, and to avoid any kind of fraud or any issues to do with credit card security. And that's being handled with a third party and validation and a whole lot of stuff. And all of that has been taking weeks to lock it in and to add the level of security we want. And
the bankers are just a bit of a wankers.
So that's why it's in beta. It's going to go probably 1st of May, 100%. And that's when enrollments happen. In other words, you click to say these are the courses I'm picking, and then 15th of May is when lessons start. If you were to enroll from the 1st of May, you'd probably pay immediately. If you've enrolled before then, we'll just contact you when all the credit card stuff and everything else has been sorted out. But it's definitely the right thing to do, get it right.
Yeah, and please ask questions on the forums. I mean, we'll be active. It's like we're very active at the show, and we're busy during the day. But whenever we get a chance, we try and get on and answer your questions for you, and we'll have more information, more stuff up on the site when we get back to our home bases this weekend and next week. You know, it's just... Right now, we're a lot of time devoted to the show here.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if we had the credit card stuff up, we would have gone live with that part today this week, because we're here. It's really hard for us to service those kind of requests and problems. So
I must say the program that you're offering is really exciting. It's
Thanks,
honestly, I mean, I told you, I mean... I felt like joining. there's some themes there that I thought, ooh, I don't know
be,
that much about
be a professor.
I was going to say, wait a minute. We could sign you up in a different category, right?
Okay, right, well.
Now, there's some other things that people have asked we're going to answer. One of them was the situation with the recruiters and what's happening with that on PhD. So what the situation is there is that there is a recruiting company that works alongside PhD that actually already places people who have been going for years at top post houses around the world, and so they will give advice on your reel and career advice, and then of course if you're talented, possibly help place you at there's no guarantees, but they'd help place you at some top facilities either in your current town or even overseas.
And I even think that from a career aspect, the feedback you get from the professors and other people on the site will really be great as well, you know, not just for finding that specific job, but for getting feedback on your work and creatively and such.
We also asked how many students were able to join a class, and we didn't actually set a limit on that, because the classes are designed to be flexible. So,
well, you can download. It really doesn't matter online as much. I mean, you'll be able to download the classes, and you'll be able to post questions in the forum, and I'm sure we'll be able to get to them.
And Aaron also asked us whether he'd get any kind of certificate mailed to his door to add to his portfolio. So the answer to that is yes, you will be accredited with the courses that you do, just like you would be at university. And then there are also going to be online accreditation courses that you can take. So the aim, and we're working with the equipment manufacturers on this to tie it in with their programs, is you'll be able to sit online accreditation and be certified in various products and stuff, and that'll be recognized internationally by the major equipment manufacturers. So that's pretty good. So let's see. And there was one last question that somebody's going to have to fill while I find it.
You know what? I'll take this real quick. Just people have been asking me the difference between FX Guide and FX PhD. They're two separate sites. We obviously run both of them. FX Guide remains the free resource with tips and tricks and
news,
the blog, the news, press releases. We have a section for Newswire. That's all continuing. That is free to you, fully sponsored on our end by the banner advertisement that basically covers our server costs. That's the only income that comes in for FX Guide. That's it. It's basically, you know, out of our pocket, basically, and any work we do on it is out of the goodness of our hearts. That's kind of the history of FX Guide.
We love doing it.
It's a labor of love. So FX PhD is a different site. It's a pay site, obviously, because of the amount of work that's involved and the amount of benefit that you're going to get from it. It's a lot of video. It's a lot of personal attention.
And a lot of time. Yeah.
A lot of time involved. I mean, this is, you know.
I think it's really exciting.
It's not a sideline like FX Guide started out as, and has been.
So I found my question.
Did I vamp well long enough?
Yeah, that was good. No, it's true. I agree with
you. Yeah, you did great.
The other thing is that somebody, we mentioned, you know, the Shake SDK stuff and getting it from Peachpit. And I spoke to Peachpit today because supposedly last Friday it was available from the Peachpit website, which was peachpit.com. And you'll note that it isn't there at the moment. So the Shake SDK stuff is definitely coming available. They were trying to get it fixed, like, by tonight for this podcast to say that it was going to be available in the store. The only thing I can say is if you check in about a week, it's definitely there. They actually have copies here at the NAB trade show, and they've got a booth, Peach Pit. But, yeah. And then for whatever reason, I think it takes like about a month before it gets on Amazon, and then it'll be there. So if anyone is having any trouble, email me, and I'll pass it on directly to Peach Pit. They're really apologetic that the website wasn't up, but they have them in stock. They have them here at the show. So if you're after the SDK stuff, that's the answer to that question. Well, that's about it, really, isn't it?
I think it is. We'll close out our podcast from Vegas, but it actually has been a lot of fun.
We got some really good stuff coming up in coming weeks. We've already recorded some stuff, and we're going to be doing some chats with people we've recorded in LA, some big film effects houses. We've gone in and sat down with the guys when we were in LA and spoken to them about films they're working on and some of the approaches they take.
I've got some more free tutorials on FXPHD, kind of give you a sample of the kind of content that we're going to be doing on the site.
There's Final Cut Pro stuff coming up and Shake stuff. And we've got some really good stuff coming in terms of some tutorials and stuff that we've recorded where we've sat down with some people here in Vegas who, you know, we're obviously in the same town together, and we've gone off and recorded them working on machines, and we'll be putting that into the background fundamentals part of PhD. So all good stuff.
Very cool. And thanks to all of our guests.
Great,
Philippe.
Yeah,
Philippe.
Yeah,
Philippe. Wally.
Jake.
Wally.
And thanks for making the cameo.
The guys earlier in the weeks, you know,
yeah.
In the week.
Yeah, it's been good. And again, nice job on Sunday.
You're very kind.
Oh, thank you.
You know, you just get the room service number for that margarita.
Yeah. Now tonight we're going out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks,
everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.